The spin of the practice sword. The stave hitting Leo in the collarbone, slightly to the left of middle. And memory flashed over me. The trees had been brilliant with fall colors. The smell of meat in the smokehouse, and the wisps of hickory smoke had filled my lungs. The house was part cabin, part white man house, with long smooth boards over the outside painted white, and chinked logs on the inside for warmth. It was Elise's house, on land she farmed. But Edoda was the hunter, and he had brought back black bear and two bucks, all three animals scored with claw marks. I wanted to hunt with Edoda, not farm like Elise. Edoda was humoring me. The clan women were butchering the meat, watching while Edoda taught me to fight. "Did you see?" he said. "The moment of release." I nodded. Edoda placed a smaller axe in my hand. It was a white man axe, the head made of steel. It was very expensive, and Edoda had bought it with the skins of his hunting, and the Dalunagei he had found in the riverbed. White man's first love, gold, had purchased the axe and the new dress I wore, the spinning wheel, the hoe, and other farming tools for Elise. Edoda pointed out the parts of the axe. Head, handle. On the head is the pole, the eye, the cheek, the toe. He touched different spots on the sharp edge, the bit or blade. He slid his long fingers down to where the head joined the handle. Beard, shoulder, heel. His hand reached the curved handle. Belly. This curve is what gives the axe its balance and its strength. He slid his hands down the handle. Throat, grip, knob. He placed my hand on the grip, adjusted it, showed me how it felt by swinging his weapon, grip only tight enough to guide, not strangle the wood. I swung mine. Edoda nodded. I had done it right. He spun, his arm flashing back, muscles tightening and releasing. His larger axe flew, bit deeply into the dead tree. I copied his movements. My small blade sank in beside his, not so deeply. Only the toe of the blade, but it held. "Well done, Gahe." He patted my head. His hand had been warm, smooth. I had been safe. I blinked back into the gym, my body bathed in a cold sweat, the memory of a fleeting moment, now gone. Leo laughed and I focused on the combatants. The battle was over. Leo had a bloody ear and Iotis had blood on his face and a busted lip. They had played rough. Iotis shook an injured hand and Leo offered to heal him. Iotis refused with words that showed he knew vamp politics. "I am honored, Leo Pelissier, master of the city of New Orleans. But my kind heal well on our own." The men were bruised and one of the battle-hard staves was broken. That was a first. "You're both stupid," I muttered. But I must have spoken too loudly as they both shifted to me, bodies bladed, two warriors facing a common foe. Though relaxed, the foe not attacking, and of no real danger. I turned and left the room, walking alone down the empty hallways, leaving behind the echoing voices and the smell of testosterone and blood, remembering the sound of my father's voice. "Well done, Gahe." Gahe. Wildcat. My name had been Wildcat. I still had a few minutes before tea, and wandered to what had once been the conference room, but for now was the main security area. The walls of HQ had been newly spelled, top to lowest basement, against flood and rising water table by the local witch coven. There was a hidden weapon storage unit on the back wall behind a new shelving unit, one of four in the complex. There was enough coffee and tea for a platoon to survive a week-long hurricane. HQ was now equipped with three different methods of making power, plus batteries big enough to run all the computer systems, and one coffee maker for that same week. We had guns, computers, and coffee, everything we'd need in case of problems. We might go hungry, but we'd be well-caffeinated. The big view screens over the table and around the room were all lit, all showing images of different parts of the compound, captured on camera, divided as to location. There were a series of the grounds. Tex, a vamp, and his dog were patrolling. There weren't a lot of vamps who liked dogs and vice versa. Three humans and two more vamps covered the grounds with him, inside the tall walls. A loyal sniper provided overwatch on our roof and grounds from his hide across the street. Things were as safe as I could make them. There was a series of views of the gym, the area outside Leo's office, and his new, more secure bedroom. There were two from inside the Blood Servant rec room. A series of camera views showed the entrances and the elevators, including the ones that had once been secret, and the various stairwells. I looked at the tea room screen. I was late. Pulling on Beast's speed, I took the stairs. At a dead run, pulling on Beast's power and the application of Newton's laws of motion, inertia and all that stuff, I raced down the halls and spun into the tea room off the gym, using the door jamb to fling myself inside. The others were there. Leo, his primo Dell, Scrappy, Bruiser, Gregoire, Katie, Eli, and Iotis. An eclectic bunch and too many people and scents for the small room. The table, laden with food and carafes, had been placed in the center of the small couches, and extra chairs had been shoved in. To the guard at the door, I said, "No interruptions," and I locked the door. Breathing hard, I tapped off my earbud and started the intros, keeping them short and truncated, leaving off all historical titles and lineage, which was usually so boring to humans. Master of the city and the territories of Louisiana, the southeastern states except Florida, and holder of goodwill treaties of loyalty from six other masters of the city from across America, Leonard Pelissier, I said. Catherine Fontenot, formerly the heir to the Master of the City, current status in flux. Gregoire, blood master of Clan Archinault, and secundo heir to Leonard Pelissier. Also, blood master of European territory and clans. Blondie had killed his EV master, but until the threat here was satisfied, he wouldn't be spending any time overseas. Adelaide Mooney, Leo's primo and legal counsel, formerly a blood servant of Lincoln Shattuck of Asheville. I caught up on a few breaths and sat in an empty chair before continuing. George Dumas, Honorio, former primo to Leo Pelissier. Lee Williams Watts, personal assistant to Mr. Pelissier. Eli Younger, of Yellow Rock Securities, second to the enforcer of Leo Pelissier. And the enforcer, Jane Yellow Rock. I pointed to myself. Mr. Pelissier and others, please meet Cy-Led Senior Special Agent Iotis Firewind, direct subordinate to Assistant Director Sol in charge of the Eastern States, recently promoted and moved from a Western law enforcement territory. He is an unclassified, non-contagious, non-moon-called shapeshifter. Leo said, "It was my understanding that Rick Lafleur was the Cy-Led agent over my territories. Has he been deposed? Deceased?"
"I'm technically Agent LaFleur's superior in Cy-Led chain of command. I expected him to be here for this meeting. He must have been held up."
Iotis gave a charming smile and added,
"I've already discovered that New Orleans traffic is difficult to navigate."
I managed to control my shock. Rick was coming here. When had Iotis called him? A tap sounded on the door and a faint scent wafted beneath. Rick. Standing, I unlocked and reopened the door. "Special Agent Rick LaFleur," I said as my ex entered. Rick nodded but didn't meet my eyes. The black wereleopard took the only other seat, beside mine. Beast growled inside. Bad meat. Did not scent mark Jean. Did not look at Jean. I ignored her. She thought at me. Rick is not meat now. No, Rick is not meat. Not now. Not ever again. I retook my seat and looked over the room, taking in the mingled scents. 6 men, 4 women, multiple paras and humans in a room built for half that number of creatures. Rick looked different. His hair had been stark black. Now there were long, thick strands of silver white all through it. His face was furrowed and lined, and he looked as if he hadn't slept in days. I frowned, not knowing what it might mean, but having no way to ask. Leo inclined his head and added,
My enforcer neglected to mention many of our titles and lands, including her own. Jane Yellowrock, enforcer to the master of the city of New Orleans, and the Dark Queen.
Rick slanted me a look, a sad smile on his face. Bruiser watched Rick watching me. Iotis frowned slightly, obviously searching for some correlation for Dark Queen in his studies. Means a formality in place for the upcoming duels, I lied. Scrappy? Lee leaned toward the table, her red hair swinging at her shoulders, and prepared cups of coffee or tea to our usual specifications, and then cups for the guests, as was appropriate for low-level humans and low-level non-vamp paras. Iotis said,
I am honored to have sparred with the master of the city of New Orleans, and even more honored to take refreshment with him and with his people.
He accepted the coffee, black, and sipped.
The coffee is very good.
Huh, not bad. I leaned back, cup in my left hand, my right in a faux pocket, fingers on the small weapon strapped there. I sipped, keeping my eyes on Iotis in case I had read him all wrong, and he was here to kill Leo. Or maybe all of us. The scents in the room were overlapping and heavy. Vamp, blood, skinwalker, werecat, Honorio human. I sipped and breathed through my mouth, tasting the scents. There was nothing of anger or hostility present, despite the testosterone and general irascibility. So I concentrated on the tea instead of the diplomatic chit-chat. Boring, dull, tedious, and mind-numbing conversation. And thankfully, not dialogue the enforcer had to pay attention to beyond listening for cues that could lead to violence, anything that meant I needed to shoot someone. If anything else came up, Scrappy would send me a memo and then beat me over the head with it until I read it. Iotis was droning on and on about the duel and the technicalities of the law regarding hosting and broadcasting and gambling, and the tax status of said gambling monies. He used phrases like the Interstate Wire Act, the Department of Justice, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, and the Bradley Act. Some of which might have been the same things, or not. Iotis wanted to be present no matter where the sangre duello took place. Right, like Leo was going to allow a cop on site, unless he had claws in the cop's life and total control over him. Again, I got to ignore it all, which was a good thing because boring. And then the meeting was over, and Leo and his cadre, including Bruiser, Rick, and Iotis, stood for small talk. I didn't look at my ex, slipping out the door as he greeted the other special agent and Bruiser. I might have stayed or pressed my ear to the door, listening in, but I caught a scent that made my hackles rise. Beast snarled and growled softly deep inside.
Werecat. Where Big Cat have smelled Big Cat before. Am Alpha.
She was right. We were Alpha to the werecat I smelled in the hallway. It was the scent of the black were-leopard Kem Nebi, part of the International Association of Wares and the Party of African Wares. Black were-leopards were from Gabon in the African Congo. Kem's maid had turned Rick. The female had been summarily executed for the deed, leaving a lot of bad feelings between the survivors. To keep Rick safe from Kim, I'd sorta become alpha over him and claimed my ex. It was complicated, and Kim was in HQ. My life was a soap opera with fangs and fur. I tapped on my comms unit. "Update on Wares," I said. A voice I didn't recognize verified all I had deduced by scent. Dang. I trotted up the hallway and took the elevator, tracking Kim's personal aroma. According to the scent patterns, Rick and Kim had met in the foyer, among a group of Wares, several of whom were unfamiliar and not catty, and Kim had embraced Rick. That must have been awkward. I sniffed, pulling in the air over my tongue, as Beast would do, parsing the scents. Two African Ware lions whom I had met, and, oddly, I smelled werewolves. Leo and the wolves still didn't get along, and most hated me, since I'd killed off an entire pack. The dogs and cats didn't get along. The mismatched group had a Grindelow with them, one I hadn't sniffed before, and who presumably had traveled with the Africans. Grindies were supposed to keep the peace, but they were good only for wear-on-human violence. Wear-on-wear or wear-on-vamp wasn't covered in the Grindies' job description. According to the sense, the various para groups had separated, and some had moved off to different areas of HQ. "Legs, everything all right?" I looked up in surprise to see Rassler standing over me. I put my shoulders back and dropped my arms. "How long have I been standing here?" "Immobile, hunched over, sniffing the air like somebody brought in hot and now Krispy Kremes. About 3 minutes." I explained the problem to Rassler. "And if a law enforcement officer, say Rick LaFleur, dies here on land that isn't technically U.S. territory, but technically belongs to Leo, then Leo also has to act as judge and jury, and I have to be executioner. And we'll be right back where we were before Leo made peace, sorta, with the Ware Coalition. We could have a war." "So you think the Wares are here to sabotage the duel?" "Maybe." I pulled my cell and texted Alex. "Werecats and werewolves in HQ, check status." To Rassler, I asked, "Where are they now?" Rassler limped to the doorway on his prosthetic leg and called to the woman at the small room to the right of the entrance, a room that held a compact version of HQ's communication and security control system. "Location of the Wares?" he asked.
"On the elevator," a woman's voice said. "Hell, it's going down. Should be going up to the library. No weapons on the scanner or pat down. Dogs and cats in same elevator. Guided, guarded by tequila antifreeze." She cursed foully. "Elevator cam shows antifreeze is out cold." To access any of the floors, the elevator required a palm print, but the print could be made under duress. I met Rassler's eyes. "S.O.D. We both said at the same time. Side by side, we whirled for the stairs. "S.O.D.'s guards?" I asked.
"Two, human. You can move faster than I can," Rassler said. "Go. I'll get a team to meet you there."
I pulled on Beast speed and raced down the steps, my feet barely touching every third or fourth tread, my hands shoving me off the landings and pulling me around tight corners. If they killed the Son of Darkness, we could be in trouble. Besides, that was my job. Slowing on sub-4, I let Beast into the front of my brain. She took over my footsteps and my body movements, making me silent. Stealthily, I moved to the bottom of the hidden stairs, in the shadows of sub-5. The lowest basement at Vamp HQ had a clay-like floor, poor lighting, and a distinct scent that combined stale walls, damp, mold, the herbal and funeral flower sweet stench of vamps, a hint of something tart, and the particular stink of the Son of Darkness. The elevator was to my right on the far end of the basement space, and the SOD hung to my immediate left, shackled to the wall by silver. The bag of bones and goo was Leo's ace in the hole to any act of war by the Europeans. They had tried to get him back several times, but taking him by magic or dragging the heartless
literally, and broken thing up 5 flights of stairs while fighting a pitched battle had proven impossible. The SOD had gone by many names in his life. The most recent was Josie's Santana, preceded by Josie's son of Judas, and before that, Yosache Bar Iudas. He was one of 2 sons of Judas Iscariot, the man who betrayed Jesus. Josie's and his brother were the fathers of all fangheads. His blood was so strong that he had survived poisoning by a rainbow dragon, silver poisoning, and the removal of his heart. I was particularly proud of the heart removal, as that had been my coup. But I should have broken my word and taken his head, because he was still a threat and a danger to us all. I could hear people talking just ahead and below, and no more blood scent than usual. No battle. No danger. At the moment, there was no threat of the SOD getting away and no humans or vamps to protect. So I eased up and pressed against the wall in the shadows to evaluate everything. Why were they here? What did they want? And why were they all together? I was downwind from the group. The stench of SOD and various were creatures was overpowering, rushing up the stairs. 2 guards lay on the clay floor, bound and gagged, mad as heck, but not out cold. Over them was chained Josie's Santana. The SOD had begun to heal. Even without a heart, he looked human rather than like a sack of broken bones and slime. His legs and arms were in the right places, his joints aligned the correct way, and his eyes seemed to be focusing on the group in front of him, though his mouth hung open at an angle and his dry triangle of a tongue protruded to one side between oversized fangs. He was a little more hairy than once before, but that was likely just an oddity of his healing, or the werewolf who bit him from time to time. Life in Vamp HQ was weird. The mixed were group stood in a small semicircle facing the vamp prisoner, but slightly to my left, in front of me. Asad, the African were lion, and his wife, Nantale, in human form, were in the forefront of the grouping. Were creatures mostly corresponded with a body weight to mass ratio, making Asad a huge man, and his lion a mid-sized smaller cat. He was black-skinned, with coarse hair and shades of black streaked with lighter brown, and he wore white robes in the Arabian style. Asad looked human enough until you saw his eyes, a lion gold with a predatory gleam. The man was a war chief for his human tribe, the Fulani, and his wife, Nantale, looked like a Nubian goddess, even without the cloth of gold and all the beaten gold jewelry she had worn when I saw her last. She was tall and muscular, with broad shoulders and long legs. The other werecat was my personal pain in the butt. Tall and thin, his muscles were well-defined, his ebony skin stretched over a frame without an ounce of fat. Beautiful. He had the sculptured features of an ancient Egyptian sarcophagus, with full lips and tip-tilted eyes blacker than a moonless night. Like Asad, he was dressed in the flowing white outer robe of an Arabian prince, and beneath it, he wore black that vanished into the shadows, regal garb, which... I stopped. Dang it all. Kemi was wearing an emblem sewn on his robes, a lizard eating his tail. I hadn't seen that emblem in months, and hadn't paid much attention at the time. But the tail-biting lizard looked like something that had been stitched into the clothing worn by the blood servants of Jack Shafru, one of Leo's sworn enemies, now dead. Some of Shafru's people had survived, and the living and the dead had been wearing a similar emblem embroidered on their inner shirts. Had someone taken over Shafru's clan, suborned Kem, and come back for Leo? Was this happenstance, or a declaration of war? There were 3 werewolves, 4 if I counted my wolf, and I did. Brute stood in front of the SOD as if guarding him, fangs bared at the grouping, growling low, a sound that shivered up through the clay floor and the walls like the vibration of a generator. He had seriously huge teeth, and at over 300 pounds, the white werewolf was big enough to take on Assad and maybe live to tell about it. He'd put on weight in the time I'd known him, but even bulked up, he couldn't defeat the whole crew. I could envision the werewolves bear-baiting brute while the cats tore the SOD to pieces, or stole him off the wall. Unless brute time-walked. The wolves were in human form, and I spared a glance to take them in. Two white, one black, all of them young, hip, dangerous. There had once been half a dozen small packs in the mountain states. Then a new guy had emerged, taken over, and united the packs from several states into the bighorns, making a mega pack. The social structures of were creatures were nothing like human social structures, and werewolf packs were the most abnormal of the weird and strange, having no wolf females. Werewolves were temperamental, and without a strong pack leader, they fought. A lot. On the floor behind the wolves was Tequila Antifreeze, putting a hand to his skull. Someone had knocked him down. He'd been injured the last time he followed orders. I didn't want him or anyone hurt like that again. For now, they hadn't killed Antifreeze. Beast stared at the bad guys. Beast is best ambush hunter. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I thought, trying to decide who to take out first. Assad took a step closer to the SOD, licking his lips, his wife at his side. Had they gotten a taste of the SOD before Brute got there? I looked up at the cameras and made a mental note to get someone to check the feed. The mid-sized Grindelo hiding above the wares wasn't a surprise, as the creatures tended to appear whenever were creatures went near humans. This one was bigger than Pia and Bean, but still the neon green of a juvie, and cuter than any steel-clawed killer had any right to be. She was perched on a beam up high, watching. At that moment, Brute must have caught my scent, because he stopped growling and glanced at the stairwell. Into the sudden silence, the visitors started speaking.
"What is it?"
one of the wolves asked in a British accent. It was the black guy. He leaned in, sniffing the SOD. To the wolf beside him, he said,
"I can't believe that you brought me here to look at this. Pathetic artwork, if that's what it is. And the stench is dreadful. The vampire bitch must have no nose at all."
Vampire bitch, I thought.
"Not art. This thing is alive," Assad said. "The fanghead female told me it is very powerful. The blood drinkers value it greatly. If we take it and drink from it, we will grow in strength and power and be able to defeat the blood suckers. Do tell. It bloody well reeks of several old vampires, rotten blood, and wet wolf."
"You smelled a dog at his feet," Nantali said, dismissive.
"Call the werewolves dogs again, and I'll slit your throat and eat your entrails before you can blink,"
the British wolfman said, with a patently false smile.
"As long as we rescue the white wolf, I don't really care what you do with the artwork."
"Rescue?"
"Stupid dog thinks Brute is prisoner,"
Beast thought at me. The werecats took a collective step forward, crowding Brute. His growl came back, louder, deeper. His hackles rose, shoulders hunched.
"Philip, I don't think he's a prisoner,"
one of the wolves said, warning in his tone. The third wolf drew a weapon and racked back the slide. The faintest footstep sounded on the stairs behind me. Help was on the way. Beast fast, I drew a vamp killer and the Walther PK-380, stepped from the stairs into the shadows into a decent firing position.
"Bugger it all. Are you insane?"
the Brit demanded of the wolf with the gun. Overhead, the Grindelo shivered and gathered herself for a launch. The armed wolf pointed the business end of the gun at Philip.
"What the bloody hell?"
Raising my voice, I said,
Who let the kitties and puppies down here?
The small group whirled to me. The wolf with the gun snarled, stepped away to get a line of fire and pointed it at me, back to Philip, then at Brute, indecisive, his body rotating slowly, leaving him open to attack. My own aim was steady on him, but I didn't want to fire into what sounded like internal werewolf politics. My killing a were in HQ could complicate a lot of things. Antifreeze, you okay? I asked. He mumbled.
I was taking them to the library. They said they had an appointment with Ernestine. It wasn't on the calendar, so I called her. She said to send them up, that she'd meet them there. After that, I don't know. I don't remember how I got here.
It hadn't been willingly. Ernestine was the vamp accountant, a withered, wrinkled, ancient woman I called Raisin. People met with her all the time, but not usually in the library, and the mention of a female vamp indicated that the Wares had had inside help in staging this foobar. Dang it. The wolf with the gun growled, aimed it steadily at me. I whipped my blade into a modified La Destreza stance and took two steps, edging between them and the SOD and Brute. I gave them my best menacing grin. Beast glowed through my eyes, a bright golden shade. The wolves stared. Furballs and hairballs with guns, working together, I said wonderingly, giving the help behind me access and time to position themselves. Who'd have thunk it? Nantale stepped forward, ignoring my insults.
Jane Yellowrock, we are pleased to know that you are still alive. The party of African wares is happy to see you breathing.
Really? I angled the blade, spinning it so the light caught the edges, so the dogs and cats could see the silver plating. A lot of paras were easily poisoned by silver, including were creatures and vamps. But I didn't have enough silver on me to take them all down. Come on, Rassler, get here. Move it. The reason I disbelieve you, kitty cat, is because I recall you bringing Paka, a black were-leopard in heat, into Nola and sicking the little kitty on my then-boyfriend.
We were not informed that Rick LaFleur was involved in a romantic relationship. It was unfortunate you suffered because of the spell she wove.
Kim had known. I smelled, felt, sensed Rassler and at least four others moving into the stairwell behind me. Finally. But I needed to stall. You knew that Raymond Mishaika, the leader of the International Association of Wares, paid Paka to do exactly as she did. But you might not know that Paka had taken a prior deal from Kem Nebi, to spell Rick and bring him intense pain, turning him into his cat and then leaving him that way. Forever. Terrible thing for a were to do to an officer of the law, wouldn't you say? Assad slowly turned to Kem Cat, a question on his face.
Paka made parley with you prior to her agreement with us. The woman lies, Kem Nebi said, speaking of me.
You are impudent, I said. This woman is your alpha. I tapped my chest with a hilt. And though I never sent the video file to the party of African wares, I have you on film groveling at my feet. Rassler, now if you please. Blood servant fast, my backup boiled into the basement. Now we were more evenly matched and my heart was no longer in my throat. I slowed the pirouette and vamp killer and holstered the H&K, kept my vamp killer pointed at Kim. Tell them, I commanded.
She smells of alpha. She smells of power and nothing of fear. Does she speak the truth? Is she your master?
Assad asked Kim, horror in his voice. Nantale looked at the SOD on the wall, indecision in her eyes. Not worth fighting all of us and a grindy to steal the bag of bones, I said. Letting Beast into my voice, I growled, Kneel, Kem Cat. Kneel and give me your throat or you die tonight for the crime of disloyalty to your alpha. Kem snarled and leaped at me. The werewolf fired. The Brit attacked him. They tumbled onto the floor, biting, snapping. The gun went off again. In the space of two heartbeats, everything went to hell in a handbasket. Chapter 4. Not everything in wear culture required teeth. In midair, Kem's claws came out. His hands sprouted black fur. His fangs extended. Kem Nebby screamed in fury and challenge. I pulled on Skinwalker Magics, pulled on the power that made me Kem's alpha. Stepped aside at the last possible moment, dropped low, lifted the blade, slashed it across Kem's body. The scream changed, a high-pitched squeal of the dying. I tore my blade out of him, altering his angle of leap. His speed carried him past me. Blood splattered against the wall and over the sun of darkness. Kem slammed into the wall next to the SOD, hung there a moment, like a parody, and slid to the clay floor, a bloody half-shifted leopard. The elevator doors closed, taking the scent and sound of fighting werewolves and one of the security guys with it. No one else moved. The only sound was the piteous mewling of Kem and the drip of blood and the soft, indrawn breath of the SOD. The stink of gunfire and the stench of werewolf blood. Beast is best hunter. Beast killed leopard. Kem will live if he shifts, I said, mostly to her. Assad stepped closer and leaned down to observe Kem Nebby sniffing. I don't believe that he can shift. Silvered blades, he asked. He sounded amused, and his expression was the same one an overfed house cat might wear while watching a mouse stuck in a trap. I hadn't left any silver in him, but Kem Nebby was prone to drinking lots of alcohol, maybe more than shifting could handle. If his liver was compromised, and if I also cut his liver with a silvered blade. Well, crap, I said. Make him shift.
No. Nantale said. By your own words, you are his alpha. You are the only one here who might be able to effect a change to his cat.
I opened my mouth, closed it. Double crap. I walked into that with both feet. Assad smiled at me, showing large white teeth in his very dark face. Yeah, he thought this was all funny. Not a lot of love between African lions and leopards in the wild. Not a lot in the were-world, either. And so far as I knew, no non-were had ever forced a were-creature to shift shape. Meaning, I likely couldn't do it no matter how hard I tried, no matter that I was Kem's alpha and had magic of my own. Were-shifting was very different from Skinwalker's shifting. I used the genetic structure of another creature to shift into the chosen shape. Were-creatures were that shape, their forms altered and changed by the were-prion. I nudged the gasping cat with a foot, thought about how Leo sounded when he called his people. Mesmerizing, compulsive, compelling, demanding. I wasn't into convincing people to do what I wanted. I was more the stab them first and persuade afterward kind of chick. That hadn't worked so well here. I glared at the dying werecat.
Jet Enforcer,
Rassler said, interrupting himself and going for professional instead of friendly. Not a good sign.
Kem did attack first. However, it would be unfortunate if the leader of the PAW delegation were to die at your hand.
Uh-huh. And then I had an idea. I was brilliant. Get Lafleur down here, tell him to run. All that boring reading about paranormals and the proper way to react within and between species would come in handy now. I heard Rassler repeat my command into the comm system, and I prodded Kem again. This time I got blood on my shoe. Stay alive. I almost added please, but that wasn't an alpha word, so I said, that's an order. I didn't see an improvement, but maybe it helped. Who knew? While I waited, I cleaned my blade on Cam's clothes and put it away, then cleaned my shoe. I sensed disapproval from the African cats. Beast wasn't happy either, kneading my mind with her claws, a sensation that made me think my brain was bleeding. She had been in the mood for a good fight, and with Cam out so fast, she was being denied it. And now I was going to try to save the cat she had almost killed. She was pouting. I ignored her. Moments later, I heard the elevator settle to the bottom. The doors opened, and I smelled a female security guard. And Rick. I didn't look up, and he stayed inside the elevator, the bright lights illuminating the scene. Yeah, there was too much blood. I had messed up. Bruiser stepped into Sub 5, walking from the stairs where I had stood. I could smell his worry as he took in the scene. I didn't dare look at him. I was afraid I'd see a look in his eyes that would tell me how badly I'd screwed the pooch. Or screwed the cat. "Rick, do you know this cat?" I asked, pointing.
"Yes."
"Specify your relationship." The room went quiet again. Into the silence, Bruiser asked, "Are you sure you want to do this?" "Nope, not at all. Rock meet hard place." To Rick, I repeated, "Specify." He didn't ask me questions, which I appreciated. He crossed the distance of the basement to me, his feet cat silent, his silver and black hair the only thing catching the light and gleaming.
"Cam Nebby had taken my maker, Sophia, his assistant, as mate, though she didn't care for him. He never forgave me for seducing Sophia's affections, if not her body. I have been in his fangs."
The last line meant he had been at Kem's mercy for teaching, and the words were laced with revulsion. Kem had been a cruel master to Rick. "Cam Nebby is my beta," I said. "I am his alpha. He attacked me without provocation and outside of proper hierarchy practices and traditions. It's my right to... not punish. The word came to me. To rebuke him.
You know demerged laws of the cursed of Artemis," Nantale said, surprised.
The Book of Where Law was on my bedside table. I'd flipped through it, then read the most pertinent parts. Like how to deal with Where Creature Chain of Command, if the situation ever presented itself. Most of Where Law was bloody and full of domination tactics. Beast had liked most of it. I hadn't. My beast moved closer in my mind, listening with the same attention she gave a hunt. I didn't respond to the Catwoman, but continued speaking to Rick. "His actions against you, while cruel, were within his rights as spurned mate. But his actions against me were improper and constitute attempted murder of his alpha. He attacked without challenge. It's also my... oh, crap, I went blank. It's my right to... not punish him." And then it came to me. "My right to renegotiate his status as a way of saving his life." I bent down to the dying cat. He was lying in a pretty big pool of blood, and his breathing was getting more shallow. I removed Cam Nebby from his official status, placing him as my Zed, the least of all my people. In retaliation for his attack, I seize all his worldly goods and all his subordinate cats. "Rick LaFleur, you are now my second in command, my beta. And I give you Cam Nebby. You are now his alpha." Rick started laughing, a sound more like grief than amusement. I glanced up at my honey bunch. Bruiser was watching me with unsmiling eyes. He had helped me research this part of Where Creature's social structure. He knew what I had to do to save Cam's life. I didn't like the cat, but still. "I wish my former beta to live..." "Liar, liar. In shame," I added more truthfully. "I gift my new beta with all Cam Nibby's worldly goods and status and cats." I looked at Rick. He was watching me. In recognition of my gift of your augmented status, you will force Kem Nebi to shift to his cat form and save his life, making him your blood beta and beholden to you. Blood beta was a tricky path to negotiate. It was a lot like winning a vamp's clam, but more. I hoped Rick was up to it. Do you agree? Rick was looking down at the cat who had connived to make his life a hell. I do, but I don't like it at all. Can you force him to shift even with silver in his blood? Rick frowned.
Yes.
I leaned over and dipped the fingers of my right hand into Kem's blood and held out that hand to Rick. He clasped my hand in his and we shook on it. Not everything in wear culture required teeth. Do not disappoint me, Beta. Rick, still holding my bloody hand, said softly, I will never again disappoint or pain my Alpha. That said a lot more than I wanted it to. But if Kem was to live, we'd have to renegotiate the wording later. I released my grip on Rick's hand and started to step away. My new Beta held on. His eyes were glowing cat green, and when he spoke, there was a purring growl in his throat.
I've never done this, only read about it. It would be easier if I was in cat shape, and so I may need help.
He dropped to his knees and shoved his free hand into Kem's wound. I felt wear power in Rick's palm grow, a buzzing, hot, cold, mist smoke of electricity. And then I felt Rick do something. He drew on my own power, and I felt the gray between bend and stretch, the way it might if I had hooks in my flesh and he tugged on them. This will do, he rumbled. He held the bloodied hand to his mouth and licked Kem's blood. Our connection was so close I could taste the blood, sickly and silvered. Gah, ick. Good werecat blood, Beast thought. Beast is best hunter. I didn't respond. Beast would kill Kem Cat. Yeah, I thought back. Not happening. Three-limbed, Rick crawled over Kem's body, as if mounting the dying cat, and placed his mouth at the man's ear, saying, My blood to your blood. My will over your will. Moon to moon. His voice dropped to a growl. You are mine. Even deeper, the growl nearly as deep as brutes. Shift. I felt the wear magic sparkle through me and over my skin like an electrified mist, scalding and frigid at once. Kem Nebi's flesh began to lose cohesiveness. A pale fog shifted from his skin, blurring. Dark lights sparkled through the haze, looking like black crystals. Kem Nebi was the first were creature the human world had ever seen. The first I had seen shift. All on TV when the paras came out of the closet. The black lights surrounding him darkened, deepened. His bones popped and crunched as they shortened or lengthened, the joints changing shape. Black hair sprouted over the visible part of his body and his spine curved in and then arched out. The feline canines in his gums elongated, and his jaw and skull took on cat-like contours. His flesh rippled, stretched. Rick released my hand and bent to the side, still crouched, still holding his own shape in the mist of the wear energies. 3 minutes passed. And at last, a breathing, black-coated jungle cat lay on the floor in the pool of blood and ruined clothing he had lost as a man. In the shadows, the muted spots of the leopard weren't visible at all. Rick held his human shape. I stepped away, checked the ceiling. The Grindy was staring at Assad as if he might taste good. He might have had vampire help, but I had a feeling that the alpha cat here, a big wig in the International Association of Wares and the Party of African Wares, had engineered this visit to Sub-5, though maybe the outcome had been a surprise. Had the werewolves been supposed to start a were-vamp war by killing the SOD, or kidnapping Brute, further weakening Leo's power base and keeping him distracted from Titus's actions? Crap. Plans within treachery, within peril. Nantale joined Rick and the black leopard on the floor, Nantale pulling the large cat onto her lap and scratching his ears. Rick stood to his feet, looming over his former enemy, the man he had just saved, his hands fisted at his sides, his clothes bloody. My ex was a seriously pretty man, even caught up in whatever emotional whirlpool he was swimming in, even with the heavy silver streaks in his black hair and the deeper lines etched into his skin. I took several slow steps back, closing the distance to Bruiser. I stopped when my shoulders nestled against the warmth of his chest. One arm closed around me again, and he whispered, "I don't think anyone could have done better, considering that Kem attacked, and the cats had been plotting something involving the Son of Darkness. You polled the waters well." Polling the waters was an old Louisiana phrase that meant I had steered my way through the currents and the obstacles. I wasn't used to praise of any kind, and I ducked my head in pleasure. This was as close to bliss as I ever got, being with Bruiser, knowing I was loved, accepted, approved of. But I had work to do. I touched his hand in apology and stepped away. Rick knelt again. Kem batted Rick's hand with his large paw, head butted Rick's chest, knocking him to his backside on the clay floor, crawled into his alpha's lap and curled up, covering Rick's legs and most of his torso. He plopped his head on Rick's knee. Rick looked as surprised as I felt. "What am I supposed to do?" Rick asked, finding my eyes in the shadows. "This is the tricky part," I said. Asad explained, his voice no longer bored, as he bent and stroked Kem's side. "A blood beater is domesticated, tamed. He will do or be whatever you need him to be." "But alive," I said. "Better than dead." "His possessions, his position in Ware society, and his mates are yours," Asad said to Rick. Rick jerked slightly, as if he'd stuck his fingers in a light socket. "Mates?" Asad was clearly amused when he said, in a laconic tone, "Yes, Kem Nebi has taken 4 mates.
4?
Oops. I hadn't known about the mates. I had thought the woman who turned Rick was Kem's only mate.
"If you give them a choice, they will choose to stay with you, as they are accustomed to comfortable lives and will not wish to return to the wild and to hunting, even to find freedom."
Ah, crap. My mind spun through all the possibilities. Crap, crap, crap. I'd screwed up big time.
"Stay with me,"
Rick repeated. "In Gabon." Carelessly, Nantale said, "2 are pregnant, in human form, but are expected to have litters of 2 to 4. Rick looked as if he had been hit with a shovel and stared down at the oversized cat in his lap. He raised his hands from the furry body as if surrounded by police.
4 wives? Pregnant? I'm not moving to Gabon. No. No way. You will have to decide if you wish the kids to live,"
Asad continued, his expression suggesting that he was enjoying this tutelage.
"Or if you will kill the males at birth. If the males live to adulthood, they will challenge you for their father's place, so it is common for the new male to kill them just after birth."
Rick jerked at the violence and cruelty in the careless words. So did I, even though I'd read them in the merged laws.
"Of course, any females born from Kem Nebi's litters will be yours to take as mate if you choose," Asad said.
Rick looked addled, stunned, pretty much the way I was feeling. My ex turned horrified eyes to me, appalled, dismayed, disgusted, betrayed by me. I shook my head and said, I didn't know about the wives. The wolves had fled. Brute was sitting beneath the SOD, watching every move the heartless creature made. The SOD was hanging on the wall, shackled into place by Silver. But things had changed. The SOD was gazing at the congealing pool of were-blood near him, and his desiccated tongue was lapping at the air as if tasting the scent. He was filthy, his exposed flesh covered in bite marks, some no more than scars, some seeping a watery, bloody fluid, some bites brutes, some vamp. Josie Santana was being inadequately fed, and he had been repeatedly drained. Brute had been biting the bag of bones for weeks, and the Grindy had never stopped the abuse. I had no idea what was supposed to happen to a vamp infected with were-taint, but Brute was probably acting under the orders of a heavenly angel, one with wings and everything, so I saw no reason to stop him. Jane? Rick asked, his cat eyes glowing slightly green in his human face. What am I supposed to do under were law? This is... He stopped and swallowed, as if the words tasted bad. A tamed cat is a slave. Gently, I said, Kim has always wanted you dead. Me dead. I couldn't save him when he was dying just now. You could. But that act left him your slave. That's the way things are done in the werecat world according to the merged laws of the Cursed of Artemis. But there's nothing in were law that prohibits slaves from being set free. No were law says you have to keep him or his possessions. No one says you have to kill Kem's male kits or mate with female kits or be the same kind of evil they are. Assad's head came up in what looked like a front. Rick looked at Kem, the green in his eyes bleeding back to the Frenchy dark of his human self. He stroked the cat's ears uncertainly. I can set him free? Yeah. According to the merged laws, he'll always be your blood beta. That's part of a higher-ranking cat saving another cat's life. But I'm pretty sure you can determine the direction of the relationship. Pretty sure you could give him back his wives and determine how he treats his wives and his young. Assad said, sounding bored, But if you set him free and send him home, he will be hunted and killed, and your new wives will be taken by the strongest male. Assad glanced at me. It would have been kinder to kill him. Bruiser murmured to Rick, You could make him your Sim-Amizi. Rick let out a breath, and the tension he had been holding. He raked his clean hand through his hair and said, Yeah, I could. Kem-Nebi, I make you my Sim-Amizi. To me, Bruiser said, Lafleur has been studying African werecat lore, or he's been to Africa. Sim-Amizi is Swahili for administrator. Rick just gave Kem a job. I studied my ex. He'd been traveling internationally. Had he been to Africa? Did that travel have something to do with his silvered hair? Rick stood, pushing Kem aside. The black leopard looked at him adoringly. Go home to Gabon and be kind to your... His lips turned down. My wives and your children. Assad snarled. Clearly, this was not what he had expected to happen. Beast snorted in derision and I grinned, showing blunt human teeth to the were-lion. Assad had been planning something disruptive and dangerous as he tried to steal the SOD. Maybe that war I had thought about. He had put tiles on a world-sized playing board, all perfectly arranged to topple for a predetermined ending, no matter where they started to fall. And then, whatever his plan had been, I messed it all up. That was clear on his face. Go me. The elevator opened to reveal more guards, which was my cue. Leaving the others and the mess of blood and interspecies politics, I slipped back up the hidden stairs, wondering where the werewolves had disappeared to. I freaking hated being out of my own enforcer loop. I needed a few minutes with Leo. As I rounded the stairs on the main floor's landing, I caught the fading stench of werewolf blood, then Iotis's faint scent.